Hi, I'm Tess Vigeland. Been obsessing over stocks? Well, Vanguard Group founder Jack Bogle says that's a loser's game and a big old waste of time.
The stock market is a giant distraction to the business of investing. Think about that for a minute.
Okay. Sure, gas prices are low now, but remember those jaw-dropping numbers on the signs a few months ago? Well, some folks have cut their ties to the whims of the energy market with home-brewed ethanol.
There is an empowerment there, I call it, to producing your own fuel for yourself.
And say you're running late to opening night at the theater. Is it worth breaking your stride to pick up a penny?
Currently, as of right now, I have found $268.11. But I did find a dime and two pennies on the way over here.
Loose change and other valuables are coming up on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, this is Marketplace Money. New year, fresh start, right? Could it possibly get any worse? Well, yes, it could. But we're not going to dwell on that possibility. It's 2009, and we've got all kinds of advice for putting last year behind you. I'm Tess Vigeland. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com.
For the last 6 months, at least, it's been tough to trust any brand name or institution or financial strategy. Seems no one was spared from the financial crisis of 08. So, as we head into this new year, is there any hope for redemption? For some perspective, we turn once again to Jack Bogle, the founder of Vanguard. He's got some pretty strong ideas about the market, how it works, how investors should use it, and how they shouldn't. Mr. Bogle, a happy new year to you.
Same to you. I hope it'll be better than the previous year.
I certainly agree with you on that one. Last time we spoke with you was on September 19th. At that point, the Dow was at 11,388. We had a terrible week of losses. And I asked you what you were doing with your money, and you had a great one-word answer, and you said nothing. I wonder, since then, we've lost 3,000 to 4,000 points off the Dow. So I must ask you again, what are you doing?
I'm still doing nothing.
Okay.
And the reason I am, we all have different circumstances. And the reason I do nothing is because I was basically very well prepared for the unpleasantness that we had in the year 2008, but simply by following the basic rules of investing that I've been promulgating for years, if not decades. And that is, first, don't forget bonds. Stocks are risky. Yes, they have the greatest opportunity, but they also have the greatest risk. You never know when you're going to get a 2008, one of the worst years in market history. And so you're prepared for that by having a bond position that has something to do with your age. As a rule of thumb, for example, if you're 65 years old, you would have 65% of your portfolio in bonds. Well, I'm older than 65, and so I had an even higher percentage in bonds. And the bond market's up a hair, depending on which part of it you look. Total bond index up about 1 or 2%, and total stock market index is down, something like 40. When you do the math, and my overall account is probably down 10% or 12%, something in that nature.
Well, let me ask you, it seems like there are a lot of lessons that can be learned from last year. We, as investors, I think, tend to get caught up in, what's hot. Whether it's the housing market or dot-coms.
Or private equity or commodities.
Exactly. How do we get ourselves out of the habit of chasing those rumors?
First, every person listening to your show should ask the first central question. Am I an investor or am I a speculator? Investing is a broadly diversified program. And buying and holding that and letting corporations earn a return on that capital. Speculation is playing the stock market, betting that somebody will buy a stock for more than you paid for it. And it turns out, I think more obvious than ever in 2008, the stock market is a giant distraction to the business of investing. Think about that for a minute.
Yeah, that's not something that you would generally think of. I mean, we're all told that the stock market is where you have to be. That's the only place that is going to give you the kind of return that is going to allow you to, say, retire.
Incorrect. It's the businesses whose stocks are publicly held that give you the return. The stock market doesn't give you anything. In the long run, the stock market mirrors exactly the returns that business earns on its capital.
If you look into your crystal ball, as we now head into 2009, what are you expecting to see?
No one can forecast. At least I can't. Maybe there are people that think they can.
Of course.
Although when I looked at the big Wall Street strategist predictions for 2008, and I think in general they thought the market would close the year at about 1,650. We now know that it's about half that level today. So forecasters can't forecast. So why would poor Bogle try to join the parade? I can't. But in the long run, we know that the market returns come from dividend yields and earnings growth. And the dividend yield is 3% now. Of course, we don't know whether the dividends will be cut a lot or not. I suspect that dividends will continue to hold their own and maybe even grow modestly. The other basically unknown secret of investing is that our corporate earnings grow at the rate of our economy. If the economy is going to grow at a nominal rate of about 5%, well, guess what? Corporate earnings will also grow at about 5%.
What do you say to those perhaps former investors? And we have some of these folks among our listeners who've written in and said, you know what? I don't trust anyone on Wall Street anymore. I don't want to have anything to do with it. I don't want to put any of my money in stocks because I can't trust the rating agencies. I can't trust my broker. I can't trust the biggest companies that were supposed to keep my money safe.
I'd say, sir, you are a man with very good judgment and have come to the correct conclusion. Wall Street has betrayed your trust. What else can I say? So how do you get out of Wall Street? What we have to understand is in the food chain of investing, and the investor, that is you, sir, are sitting at the bottom of the food chain. It is ever thus. You get what's left of the market's return after the croupiers rake their share off the top. That's why the croupiers win in Las Vegas. That's why the state wins the lottery. It goes on and on. So stay out of gambling in stocks. And the way to own corporations, therefore, and the way to get yourself to the top of the food chain is to squelch or squash those intermediation costs. And the best way to do that is to diversify and own, in essence, in principle at least, every company in America and hold it forever. And then you will get the corporate return, and Wall Street won't get its share. It's called the Total Stock Market Index Fund. And I'm not at all embarrassed to say I started the first index fund way back in 1975. It was called Bogle's Folly at the beginning. All it was based on the simple rules of mathematics. And that is all investors as a group share the market's return after cost. And since those costs run something like 2 to 2.5%, if the market gives an 8% return, you will get between 5.5% and 6% return.
Jack Bogle is the founder of Vanguard and a good friend of the program. And boy, I hope when we talk to you again later this year that we can say it's at least been a better 2009 than 2008. Thanks so much for your time.
Okay, good to be with you always.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com. And by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters. And by saveandinvest.org, helping military service members and families manage their money with confidence by providing unbiased financial information, tools, and more. Online at saveandinvest.org.
And this is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. It's time for the audio op-ed we call The Straight Story. And with me once again is our own Chris Farrell. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Tess.
I think we're going to do something a little different as we start the new year. First of all, a very happy new year to you.
Happy new year.
2009. Let's hope it's a better one than 2008.
Well, you know, 2008 was really bad, so it just has to be a little bit better. just a little bit better.
Yep. All right. Well, last week you and I discussed our 2008 financial resolutions, and we did pretty well between us.
That's right.
We fulfilled most of our goals. So now it's time to take a look at what we're going to plan for 2009. Number one, what is your first financial resolution of 2009?
Well, the first financial resolution of 2009 is not going to be that hard for me to do, continuing to exercise. Because what has become clear to me over time, health is a really big part of preparing for the long haul. Because if you want to be working when you're in your 60s and your 70s, you may be doing something different. You may say goodbye to the boss for the last time. I'm never going to talk to you again. But you can embark on a new adventure. You need your health.
I like that one. Well done. Well, I'm going to start with, see, now you're talking about being very healthy toward, you know, the end of life, your later years. I'm looking at what would be the bad news if something happened.
Right.
Neither my husband nor I have wills. And at our age, that is probably inexcusable.
I almost said excuse me, but...
Yes. And the irony is, of course, that, you know, last year we did a whole series on this very program about how to prepare yourself for this eventuality.
Well,
so
great.
We are going to find an attorney and do some very basic wills. I don't think our life is terribly complicated, but, you know, we need to say where things are going to go and who's going to take care of who and how and... and all that sort of thing. So
that's wonderful.
That's a
wonderful
priority.
Well, my other one is not a will, but this is the big one.
You'll have to really work at this one.
I'm going to have to work this one. This is to bring organization to all the papers, all the finance.
Okay, I've seen your office. This is a really good one for you.
So we're talking about it. Work. And at home. What do you I think that's a big one. What do you think?
I think that is an excellent one. And I think what we're going to do to hold you to this, we're going to take a photo of your office this week, and we're going to put it online.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end of December of this year, we're going to take another photo and see how you've done.
All right. Ooh, boy, that's harsh, but it's a good incentive. Very good incentive.
All right. Well, my second resolution is to bulk up our emergency fund. We just, frankly, don't have enough in kind of liquid savings. God forbid something happens and we need that cash. I just don't feel like we have enough. What is your recommendation? What do you think? 3 months, 6 months, a year?
You know, I think in the end, 3 months is about right.
Yeah.
Because if you do the 6 months to a year, it's intimidating. And people begin to think, I'm never going to get there. But if you're not carrying any credit card debt, which I consider part of this overall plan. So you're carrying no credit card debt, so you don't have that bill that's weighing on you every month. And then you go to 3 months, you know what happens? 3 months becomes 4 months. 4 months becomes 5 months because you've installed a certain discipline. I think it's realistic. You achieve it. And what's going to end up happening is 3 months becomes 4 months.
Okay. We are on our way.
Yes.
I will make those extra deposits this very month. All right. So, folks, you can hold us to those, and we'd love to hear what your financial resolutions are for 2009. Perhaps it'll give us some ideas for 2010. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thanks a lot.
Did you know you can run a car on rotten beer? An ethanol homebrewer snaps up every drop he can.
You know, I talk to these breweries and they say, how much are you throwing away? Well, I'm throwing away 1 or 2 million of gallons per year. And I think, geez, you know, that's really a crime. That's energy.
99 bottles of ethanol on the wall. Okay, that story and your questions are up next on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland. Last year, as gas prices were rising by the day, some experts predicted we'd soon see oil at $200 a barrel. Well, we know how that turned out. But it is safe to predict that one day oil and gas prices will rise again. But what if you could get fuel for less than a dollar a gallon from a machine that costs several thousand dollars up front? Do the savings add up? We sent reporter Rachel Dornhelm to check it out.
Tom Quinn is standing in the driveway of his Silicon Valley home over a contraption about the size of a washer-dryer combo.
I have a key for safety, so only I can pump. And you turn it on. Now you hear the pump turning. This is a similar pump you'd have at the gas station.
Quinn has spent the last 3 years perfecting the E-Fuel 100, a do-it-yourself ethanol machine.
It has a DOT-approved nozzle, just like you have at the gas stations. Ah, fresh sounding of ethanol going in your tank.
Like a washing machine, the E-Fuel requires just three hookups: an electric outlet, water in, and water out. It makes its auto-grade moonshine out of products now considered garbage, leftover alcohol, or else a cheap sugar waste product.
This is typical discarded vodka, 80 proof, so that's 40% ethanol. You know, we can pour that in there.
But it's not like you can dump in the leftover wine from a dinner party and be done with it. It takes 25 gallons of beer to make 1 gallon of ethanol. But if you know a brewery, no problem, says Quinn.
You know, I talk to these breweries and I say, how much are you throwing away? Well, I'm throwing away 1 or 2 million of gallons per year. And I think, geez, you know, that's really a crime. That's energy.
Customers who buy a machine can be hooked into a local supply network. They might get leftover wine from Northern California or beet sugar waste from Nebraska. The machines won't be available until the end of the year, but Quinn said he's had thousands of orders, mostly from small business owners like Steve Allen. He has a construction business near Peoria, Illinois.
You know, when you have 10, 20 vehicles on the road running service calls or whatever, it adds up real quick. We probably spend $5,000 a month on fuel.
He says he learned he can fill the tanks of his conventional vehicles with 30% ethanol and the rest gasoline.
There is an empowerment there, I call it, to producing your own fuel for yourself.
Allen says he does worry whether the technology will gain wide acceptance. I asked Harvey Blanche at UC Berkeley's Bioenergy Institute whether the E-Fuel 100 is a practical solution for the average consumer. He responded like the engineering professor he is.
Well, I think you have to sit down and do the math.
Blanche says the process is sound. It's the way Henry Ford imagined we'd make fuel for cars back in 1908. But while the raw materials for the E-Fuel ethanol may sound cheap, you have to look at how much it will cost to transport them to your door. Blanche says a single-family pumping station may not be efficient.
It's just as the scale gets bigger, the economics get much better.
So we're not going to see homes being sold with a swimming pool and an ethanol fueling station?
Well, you never know. It's all a question of how cheaply we can get the raw material to work with.
And how high gasoline climbs. In San Francisco, I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace Money.
Well, I got a problem with my automobile. It smokes like a furnace, and the brake linings squeak. My wheels need alignment, I can never go fast. And I won't have to worry when they run out of gas. I'll be glad when they run out of gas. I'll be glad when they run out of gas. When those gas pumps are pumping their last, I'll be glad when they run out of gas.
Credit card companies are going to extremes to protect themselves during this economic crisis. That card you never use, the one that's just for emergencies, you may get a letter canceling it. Or that other one, you know, the one with the high limit they use for all your holiday gifts, the limit could get cut overnight, leaving your credit score in the dust. So we wondered, where have all the good cards gone? Well, Consumer Reports managed to rustle up a few. I talked to Chris Ficarra, an associate editor at the magazine, about how they picked the best plastic for your buck.
Well, we went through hundreds of credit cards in conjunction with cardratings.com, and we sort of looked at 12 that we thought were the best in three different categories. Cards that were sort of the best low rate, low fee cards, cards that were best for cash back, and cards that were best for gas rewards.
Let's start with the low rate cards. What did you find there?
Well, our criteria for low rate cards was cards that didn't charge a balance transfer fee and cards that didn't charge any annual fees. So there's cards that sort of were for people who might carry a balance, who want a very low APR, or might want to transfer a balance with very low penalties.
And what was the best card?
Well, the Clear card from American Express is a very good card. It charges a 0% APR for 12 months, and then it charges a fixed 5.99% on balances transferred for the life of the balance.
Is there any sort of annual fee?
There's no annual fee. There's a very liberal one-month grace period for payments. There's no fees for late payments, no fees for cash advances, and there's no over-limit charges.
And what about cashback?
In terms of cashback cards, it depends on the level of spender you are. The Blue Cash from American Express is a good card if you spend a lot of money. But the highest rewards, you don't really earn those until you've spent over $6,500 in calendar year on the card. So that's very good for high spenders. For lower spenders, the Capital One No Hassle Cash Rewards card is very good. So it gives 2% cash back on gas and groceries and 1% back on all their purchases with no limits on the rewards, and the rewards never expire.
All right. Now, a lot of people are looking for, you know, some of those gas rebate cards. What'd you find there?
Well, if you live close to a gas station that you use regularly that has a very good card, it's worth looking at those. The Chase BP Visa card is a very good card. It gives you 10% rebate on gas for the first 60 days and then 5% afterwards at BP stations. If you're near Hess stations, they offer 10% back on Hess purchases for 90 days and then 5% afterwards. If you just want a general gas card, the Chase Perfect MasterCard is very good for big spenders. And the Discover Open Road card is good if you don't spend quite as much on gas per month.
All right. We've dealt with some cashback cards and gas credits, but I think a lot of people still look for these frequent flyer miles that you can rack up if you use, say, a United credit card or an Alaska Airlines credit card. Are those a decent deal?
Those cards have increasingly become worse over the past couple of years. It's getting harder and harder to redeem miles. Obviously, you're not as much a priority as someone who's paying cash when they're booking a flight. So really, you're better off going with a cashback card and then booking your airline flights separately.
If you're looking through all these offers, what kind of red flags should tell you that perhaps it's an offer that's too good to be true?
Well, you need to look through all of the sort of terms and conditions, not just the APR. You want to look at the default APR should you get into trouble. You definitely want to look at if you're looking to transfer balance. There's very few cards that give you sort of 0% on balance transfers nowadays. Most charge you 3% of the balance to transfer balance. So you want to look at the fine print there. And obviously, most of the really bad cards are aimed at sort of subprime borrowers, people with a 660 FICO score below. And those cards can be laden with extra fees in the fine print.
Okay. Chris Ficarra is associate editor with Consumer Reports. Chris, thanks so much for the information.
Thank you very much.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation, online at kauffman.org.
It's time for Getting Personal, that part of the program where we answer your questions. With me is our personal finance expert, Chris Farrell. And Chris, our first question is from Heather. She's on the line with us from the City of Lights, not Paris. That would be Las Vegas. Hey, Heather.
Hi there.
Tell us what your question is for Chris today.
Well, my son is a performer here in one of the Las Vegas shows, and...
Wait. What kind of show are we talking about?
Yeah, uh-huh. They make the quick assumptions when thinking about Las Vegas. He's in one of the Cirque shows at the Mirage.
Ooh, wonderful.
Oh, boy.
Is that the Beatles show?
It is, yes.
I've seen that. It's wonderful.
It is pretty spectacular, I will say.
How old is he?
He's 8.
Good for him. Is he hoping for a career in show business?
Yes, actually, if you ask him, he wants to be an actor for the rest of his life.
Well, so are we talking about his money issues or yours?
Well, we're talking about his money issues, actually. His income has, I would say, doubled the household income, but we don't need it. So I would like to wisely invest it somehow for his future.
Yeah, well, boy, Chris, we've got an 8-year-old who's making quite a nice chunk of money here. Should all this be going to college or maybe a little bit for fun?
This is really wonderful because you have a real chance for him to build some wealth. First of all, I do think the Roth IRA is a good idea. And boy, when you just think about if he's 8 years old, pulls his money out at 65, and all the gain is tax-free, that's really an incredible opportunity. He wants to be an actor, but an education is still a really good thing. It's something to fall back on.
Chris, it's not often where we tell people that their college education will be the fallback plan.
I know, but, you know, he's got, I mean, look, he's already in the circ. He knows what his career is. He wants to be in the show business. So, yes, the college is an insurance policy. And, you know, he doesn't have to put aside much, but, you know, maybe a little bit into a 529 college savings plan.
Is he there? Can we talk to him?
Yes, he's actually very excited to talk to you. Just a second.
Hello?
Hi, Mason. How are you?
Good.
Are you a big Beatles fan?
Yeah. Once they got in the show, I just... those are my favorite bands now.
So what do you want to do with your money?
I want to save most of it for a house and for college. And I get some to my mom.
Oh, what would you get for your mom?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think at this point it's gas money because I wanted to hire a driver to take him to and from work every day.
Well, there's a role reversal, isn't there?
I know.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. Enjoy this time. It's very, very exciting.
It is exciting. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Have a great day.
Well, you know, Chris, we're not performing nightly at the Sands, but we are available anytime to answer your personal finance questions. Give us a call. We're at 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY. Or write to us. Our website is marketplace.org. Click on the Getting Personal link there. All right, Chris, let's reach into the email bag. And Amy writes in from Rochester, Minnesota, and she's wondering about something called a stretch or legacy annuity. Someone is trying to talk her elderly mother into buying one, and she hasn't been able to really find any kind of information anywhere. She's a little concerned about this. Should she be?
Not necessarily. So what it is you're passing along the tax-deferred allowance to a beneficiary. The reason why you would do this is because when the person dies with the annuity and the heirs get the money, you know, they got a big tax hit. By passing along the tax allowances, there's a lot more tax flexibility.
Anything suspicious about someone trying to push her into this, or is that just business as usual?
I think that's business as usual. There's a lot of pushing of annuities right now. And the simple reason is we live in an environment where everything seems to be going down. And so annuities are being peddled as a safer product. And you just can't be seduced by that. You got to say, well, is this right for your mom?
All right, Chris, let's go to an email. And Amanda writes in from Indianapolis. She's got about $5,000 that she and her husband want to invest in a renewable energy company. The companies that she's most interested in, though, are in Canada and England. So that means foreign investments. And she found some brokers who do overseas investing online, but they've got a minimum of $10,000 for an investment. Again, they've only got five here. So she wants to know if there's a broker who could help her with just a $5,000 investment, or if this is all just too complicated and maybe she should put that money into a U.S. company.
I would take a different route, Tess. The main route that I go is find a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund, an ETF, that invests in alternative energy globally, around the world. Because it could be very expensive to buy individual stocks overseas. Secondly, buying individual stocks is risky anyway. And it seems to me we're talking novice investors. And not only are you looking at individual companies, but you're looking at individual companies overseas.
And aren't there all kinds of tax implications that way as well?
Right. So let's go the mutual fund route or the exchange-traded fund route. Make it easy. If you really, really, really want to buy individual companies that are overseas, there is a very easy way to buy it here in the United States, and they're called ADRs, American Depositary Receipts. ADRs tend to be bigger companies. But again, it's a very cheap, easy way. If you go to all the sort of like, E-Trade and that type of thing. But my main one is mutual funds, exchange-traded funds. Yes, go ahead, invest in alternative energy if that's important for you. But even though we're going for one sector of the market, let's get some diversification. And I think it's smart to invest globally.
Thanks for the email, Amanda. And we are answering a world of questions all the time. You can give us a call at 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY. Or write us an email. You'll find the Getting Personal link at marketplace.org. And we'll be back with more Getting Personal later in the show. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. Look back at 2008, and it's hard to believe all that stuff happened in 1 year. Bear Stearns, Fannie and Freddie, IndyMac, Lehman, WaMu. $700 billion bailout, 40% drop on the Dow, all in 1 year. On this week's A Day in the Work Life, as we all try to move forward, we visit with a man who counted the hours and the days.
My name is Father Time, and I am the father of time for 1 year. I've advanced as far as I can go. It's December 31st. It's the end of the line. It's hard to get another job as Father Time. There's not, for instance, a market really for Father Time. It's not like you begin as a low-level Father Time and work your way up to become some sort of the CEO of Time. What did I like best about 2008? The Giants winning the Super Bowl, that was a surprise even to me. I was out of my seat. And of course, this Obama fellow was something. Lowlights would be just about everything else. I've made a modest salary, mostly off freelance work that has little to do with my Father Time duties. I make a pretty penny, appearing as Dumbledore in bookstores around the country when there's some sort of Harry Potter promotional activity going on. And this is not known to a lot of people who don't follow the tax code, but a large portion of the alternative minimum tax actually goes to me. Well, being Father Time, I sort of saw this economic downturn coming. So right before the crash, I put a whole lot of money into treasury bonds. So the money's protected. It's not growing, but, you know, I have the cash in there. I see great things for 2009. I'm rather looking forward to it. I think there'll be perhaps a few less 500-point plunges in the stock market. I think it's going to be quite a thing to see. Why did I get all the bad crap? But don't listen to me, I'm old.
Old and wise, Father, old and wise. A Day in the Work Life was performed by Rico Galliano and produced by Stephen Hoffman. You know that phrase, one man's trash is another man's treasure? Just how much of a treasure could that be?
It's $1,013 and something cents.
Coming up, professional penny pinchers on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland. See a penny, pick it up. All the day you'll have good luck. But think about it. You'll also have more money. In tough times, does every penny really count? Well, literal penny pinchers keep their eyes peeled for every coin that hits the pavement, and now they post what they find on the internet. From New York City, Sally Herships has more on a group of bloggers obsessed with small change.
How much loose change do you think you've passed on the street? A few cents? A penny here, a penny there? And who stops for a penny anyway? The Humphrey family does.
Hi!
Barbara and Scott Humphrey live with their two daughters in New York City. They've been collecting loose change from the street for a few years now.
This is it. This is our fiscal year 2008 change pot jar.
And even they're surprised by how much they've found.
What is your grand total so far?
I know.
Daughter number one, Brianna.
It's $1,013 and something cents. I can't remember the change.
Just to be clear, this is money they've found on the ground. It's sort of a hobby. They take a lot of long walks.
We're all looking around. You know, we have our glasses, we have our Purell bottles, we have our little change purses.
The family has a blog called Change Pot, where Barbara keeps a running tally of their findings.
Because I figured it would be a nice way at the end of the day, kind of like a Doogie Howser thing. You know how at the end of the day he'd write down things? We basically keep track of it that way.
It all started about 3 years ago when Barbara was at college and saw some money on the ground.
In my school, people, they complain about not having any money. But meanwhile, there's 7 cents on the floor. Nobody would pick it up.
So she did. But there were some odd looks, even from Scott.
I thought she needed help because I'm like, why are you picking up change? I mean, I make a decent salary. What is this? And 3 years later, it's added up kind of nice.
And now the whole family contributes.
Even you can find a broken penny in the street.
Even 6-year-old Karen knows to look for beaten up coins. Banks will give you clean new shiny ones in exchange. But not all change seekers are in the Humphreys League.
Currently, as of right now, I have found $268.11. But I did find a dime and 2 pennies on the way over here.
Scott Caulfield lives in St. Louis. He also chronicles his finds on a blog called Change Race. And he seems to share a certain outlook on life with the Humphreys.
I'm the kind of guy I'd much rather drive around for 5 or 10 minutes and find a free spot or a metered spot than pay $7 or $8. It's kind of just a different way of thinking. I don't look at it as cheap. I just look at it as smart.
He's a totally dedicated change hunter, even on the most important day of his life.
I found 1 penny on the dance floor during my wedding.
Scott sees the value in small change.
It's interesting how people just walk away. You know, they'll drop a quarter, they'll drop a nickel, they'll drop a dime, and they'll walk away.
I mean, people see change as just nothing worthwhile or significant. My daughter, on the other hand, when she sees a penny, she says 99 more make a dollar. And I'm very proud of her for that. Very proud.
Neither the Humphreys or Scott Caulfield have specific plans for their savings. But I know what I'm going to do. Follow some advice I got from Scott. Keep my head down and look for silver. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace Money.
Every time it rains, it rains, and it's from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains, and it's from heaven.
In 2008, we asked a lot of people a simple question. What are you doing? How are you changing your ways to adapt to an economic mess? Well, as we look ahead to 2009, we'll take inspiration from one more of those answers. This one comes from Ben Valor Kaplan. He left his Wall Street job to strike out on his own.
My name is Ben Valor Kaplan, and I am the managing partner of an investment firm called Syntrinsic Investment Counsel. We advise foundations and endowments on how to steward their assets. I've been doing this for 8 years. I was at one of the large Wall Street firms, UBS. Had my own little boutique team within that. And over the last year or so, it just became evident to us that we wanted more control of our reputations. Things caused our clients to question our firm's integrity. And I did have 3 of my largest clients say, we're no longer comfortable with you being affiliated with UBS. Now, I think they would have said the same thing if I'd been at Citigroup or Merrill Lynch. I felt in my gut we needed to be out by September. We left August 20th, started our own firm. And so, I mean, we went from basically the largest wealth manager in the world to setting up our own shop. Absolutely scary because so few banks are lending, and particularly not to startups. So it meant putting a lot more of my own capital in to start. The vast majority of our clients have agreed and have come with us. Certainly it would have been more convenient in many ways to just stay the course. Almost as convenient to just move to another firm, same model, same idea, get a nice big check. But I also know if I hadn't made this choice, a little part of me would have died. And I didn't want to look back 20 years from now wishing I had made that leap of faith. It's not going to get easy anytime soon, meaning there's months and months of this sort of uncertainty still to play out. I think that what we're going through as a country right now is an incredible opportunity to reevaluate what we're doing personally and professionally. What am I trying to accomplish with my life? And what do I really believe in? And starting there and building that clarity first.
Ben Valor Kaplan manages money for charitable investors in Denver, Colorado.
You can find our Here's What I'm Doing series archive at marketplace.org, along with all of our coverage of fallout from the financial crisis.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com. And by the Henry Luce Foundation, seeking to increase American understanding of East and Southeast Asia. And by FINRA Investor Education Foundation, helping inform today's investor through innovative grant-making and educational funding. Online at finrafoundation.org.
We're back with more Getting Personal, and John is on the line from Laverne, Minnesota. John, I understand someone near and dear to you has won a nice chunk of money. Is that right?
Absolutely. That would be my girlfriend.
And how much?
$30,000.
Wow. What did she win it in?
It was a sweepstakes for an online social site.
So somebody actually wins those things?
Yeah. Blew me away.
So $30,000, that's a lot of money.
Yes, and especially for her. It's basically twice her income. Excellent opportunity for her to hit the reset button on her debt and finances. Great opportunity for her. Basically, $20,000 of it is going to go towards paying off all various debts, so credit card, et cetera, and hopefully leave her with a little bit of fund money as well.
Okay. So what's your question for Chris then?
The question is, does she need to pay estimated taxes immediately, or can it wait until April of 2009 without incurring a penalty?
Ah, good question.
It is a good question. And she is supposed to pay estimated taxes.
Okay.
That's the real recommendation that's out there, just so you don't deal with any of the penalties that can be associated with that. So it should make April 15th a little easier to deal with, too.
Then with anything extra that she may have, where's a good place to store that? Something that would be accessible within 5 days or something along those lines, but still makes a decent interest rate.
Yeah, hard to come by a decent interest rate these days, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah, exactly.
I had my answer right there until you threw in the decent interest rate, which of course makes it more and more complicated. I think like a money market deposit account at a bank is perfectly fine. You get access to the money, you have the FDIC insurance, you really don't have to worry about it. This seems to be one of those, maybe not once in a lifetime opportunities, but a rare event that comes along and you get a chance to sort of really clean up your finances. So I'd go with the very low risk route until we have built up a little more savings, have a little more security.
That was my thought as well. So that's great advice.
Well, terrific. Please congratulate your girlfriend for us and tell her that I finally have some possible confidence that I might actually win a sweepstakes someday.
Exactly. Me too.
Thanks for the call. All right, Chris, we also had a couple of emails about HSAs, health savings accounts, that I thought maybe you could help these folks out with.
Well, they might be called confusion savings accounts.
I think that would be an excellent name for these things. Well, let's go to, Robert in Michigan, and he recently changed jobs. There's a little less than $1,000 left in the HSA he has through his old company. So he's worried that the management company that runs the HSA is going to charge all these high fees that are eventually just going to eat up the value of the account. So does he have any options here? Are these portable?
Yes, they are portable. He has a couple of options. My main one is to spend the money on his health care. Tess, you know, even when you have health insurance coverage, there's lots of things that aren't covered and you have to pay for.
So one thing, you know, if you want to use up all that money, maybe a new pair of eyeglasses, a visit to the dentist, that sort of thing, right?
Exactly. All those qualified medical expenses. Remember, it's a tax-free withdrawal.
So use it.
Use it.
All right. Well, Nikki from Virginia just learned something about her health savings account that she can invest it.
Yep.
She says any money above what the bank called an investment threshold can go into a mutual fund. But she's wondering why she'd want to invest HSA dollars into mutual funds. She's worried about being able to access the account.
Okay. There's a couple things going on here. I was talking to a professor, and he's a health savings account expert. And when his account grew to $9,000, he started putting into growth funds. And the reason is it compounds free of taxes. And then when he withdraws the money, maybe in his retirement, if he's lucky, maybe in a couple of years, if he's unlucky, he's gotten some extra kick there. And again, the gain is tax-free. Let's say, Tess, you put $1,000 in your health savings account and it's in a mutual fund.
Okay.
And over the next 20 years, that becomes $20,000.
Yeah.
And you withdraw that to pay for qualified medical expenses. You pay no taxes.
Only if it goes toward medical expenses, then.
That is correct. However, there's no age limit on those medical expenses. Medicare, we all know Medicare is our universal coverage system for the elderly, but Medicare covers about 50% of your medical expenses, not much more than that. So again, a health savings account, if you're lucky, if you're one of the lucky ones that doesn't have to tap into it early and it grows and it compounds, you can use it in your retirement to help pay for those little pills.
Yeah, because you kind of get to the point where you're like, oh my God, I got to use it. But I guess you don't have to.
Just let it grow.
Great idea. Just let it grow. Unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for questions today. But Chris is answering your questions every weekday on his blog. That's at marketplace.org. And the Getting Personal link is there to send us an email as well. Or you can call us. The number is 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY. Thanks, as always, for the great advice, Chris.
Thanks a lot, Tess.
This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. Teenagers. Most parents would call them trouble machines. How do you steer your kids away from reckless behavior? Sure, you can tell them not to drink or smoke or let their grades slip, but wouldn't a little, cash incentive sweeten the deal? Hey, there's a name for that. What is it again? Blagojevich. Bribery. Kenny Malone explored this age-old parenting method to find out if it really works.
Tony Frame's parents were out for the night. His older brother had come home from college and invited a few friends over.
Most of the night was sitting around. We would listen to music, and somebody had brought Jägermeister, somebody had brought vodka, and there was some beer.
That was 12 years ago. Tony was 15 years old, and he'd never had a drink. But that night, somebody handed him a quivering green Jell-O shot.
That would have been a $1,000 Jell-O shot.
Mary Frame, that's Tony's grandmother, had promised him a grand if he held off drinking until he was 21. That boozy gelatinous blob was Tony's first test. We'll let you know how that turned out in a minute. This pay-for-sobriety plan started 2 decades ago, when Mary read an article about binge drinking at college. It scared her into action.
I just said, if you don't drink, there'll be a reward for you when you're 21. They said, how much?
Call it what you will, it was a bribe. And virtually every parent has gone down that road at some point to help their kids stay on the straight and narrow. Goodies for good grades, a few bucks for taking out the trash, a prize for steering clear of drugs. Psychologist Valerie Reyna is an expert in teen behavior at Cornell University. Her research shows that cash rewards are particularly effective on teens.
It's a question of what are the risks, what are the benefits, and then what are the norms? And all of this goes into a kind of equation that occurs in the human mind, and it occurs unconsciously. But it influences behavior. So at the level of just pure monetary reward, you're adding a bit of weight to the benefits of waiting or of not engaging in these risky behaviors.
At least in the short run. Long term, experts warn that payoffs may create an unhealthy exchange rate. Parenting expert Alfie Cohn is the author of Punished by Rewards.
The research shows that reward programs, well-meaning though they might be, are not just ineffective, they actually undermine the very things we're trying to promote.
He says once the cash stops flowing, kids are even less likely to bother behaving. And even worse, rewards could create little bribe monsters.
Because when you dangle a reward in front of kids for doing something, they come to look upon you as a giant goodie dispenser with legs.
Mary Frame and her husband Shorty were willing to take the risk. And with 13 grandkids, they were putting a nice chunk of money on the line. Luckily, they have honest grandkids. The first five admitted to falling off the wagon, so Mary and Shorty simply doubled the prize. Grandson BJ Gall says he was all about the money at the start of high school. Back then, $2,000 seemed like a lot, but...
As I started having a job into high school and college, I was making more money than that on my own in a given year or whatever time period, and, you know, became less money over time as the challenge became more and more difficult. the money was less valuable. So I think at an early age, it was a lot of money. And as it grew up, it was more of what it symbolized.
What it symbolized was his grandmother's approval. BJ stuck to non-alcoholic drinks and bought himself a guitar with his money. One day he hopes to learn how to play it. For BJ's cousin Lauren Ingram, the money was almost secondary to the easy out it gave her.
It was just a good excuse to tell people why I wasn't doing it. And at that age, kids understand that a whole lot more than they understand, oh, well, you just don't want to.
As for Tony Frame and that jiggling jello shot, well, I'll let Tony explain.
I never saw $1,000 like laid out on a table. It was there maybe in the back of the head. But when I'm making that decision, mainly I think it was just, hey, here's the opportunity. I can do this. And then the next day I can go tell my friends that I got drunk. And I think that was really the entire thought process, if there was any.
He slurped it right up. Even so, Mary and Shorty are pleased with their experiment. So far, they're 3 for $9 with 4 more to go. And they've discovered a new economic benchmark. The modern price of sobriety appears to be $2,000. I'm Kenny Malone for Marketplace Money.
And that's Marketplace Money for this week. Next time, as colleges start up a new semester, we take a hard look at who's defaulting on student loans. Marketplace Money is produced by Jim Wallace, Stephen Hoffman, Eve Tro, and the rest of the Marketplace staff. Our theme was composed by Mark Governor. The executive producer of the program is J.J. Yore. Remember, talk to your own expert before you make any big money decisions. I'm Tess Vigeland. A very happy new year to you, and we'll see you next week.
Want to hear something on Marketplace Money again? Help is as near as your home computer. To find audio archives of past programs and information on transcripts, just go to the internet and log on to our website. The information you need when you need it is only a few clicks away. Just point your browser to marketplace.org. Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com. American Public Media.